The next case is 05-937, State of Ohio versus Joshua Holmes. Zudy.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. My name is Catherine Zudy, and I represent the appellant, Mr. Joshua Holmes. At this time, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time there.
Citizens have the right to refuse an unlawful and warrantless entry into their homes.
Counsel, let me ask you a first question. This home belonged to the mother. Is
correct.
That correct?
Correct.
He was not on the title to the property. He was merely staying there, correct?
That is not on the record, Your Honor.
Well, all right. Let's. It's a given. It belongs to the mother. There's no argument there.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So did he have privilege to exert this?
Yes, Your Honor. Mr. Holmes had standing to assert a Fourth Amendment right at his mother's house. In order to assert a Fourth Amendment right and to have standing, a person must have both a subjective and a legitimate expectation of privacy. In order to demonstrate a subjective expectation of privacy, a person must take normal precautions to maintain his or her privacy in the area that he or she believes that is protected. Ms. Holmes was present at her house, but asked her son, Mr. Holmes, to answer the door when the officers knocked. Mr. Holmes only cracked the door open when initially responding to the officers' questions, showing that he wanted to maintain a specific level of privacy in Ms. Holmes's house, in his mother's house. Mr. Holmes had control over the residence and the situation because Ms. Holmes was there at the house, and Mr. Holmes was asked to go to the door and answer the questions. Mr. Holmes, in effect, stood in the shoes of his mother. Therefore, Mr. Holmes had the right to exclude people from the house.
Counsel, the U.S. Supreme Court just recently, within the last week or so, announced a case in this general area. I haven't had a chance to look at that. Does it impact at all?
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Yes,
Your Honor. Georgia versus Randolph does impact Mr. Holmes's case. The United States Supreme Court's decision impacts Mr. Holmes's case in the area of consent and what a reasonable person would believe. In Georgia versus Randolph, the United States Supreme Court reasoned that a caller standing at the door of a shared premises would have no confidence that an invitation by one occupant standing at the door would, that person would be able to enter when the other occupant standing at the door is standing there telling the visitor to stay out. As in Georgia versus Randolph, if a visitor knocked and the occupant began to close the door on him or her, no sensible person at that point would go inside under those circumstances, and no sensible person would believe that he or she had consent to enter under those circumstances.
But counsel, in Georgia versus Randolph, there was a declination of having the officers enter. There were two, the husband and wife. The husband and wife were at the house. There was an allegation of domestic violence. So there was an incident that allowed for the officers to be there legitimately.
Yes.
The wife says, come on in. The husband says, no. The husband was an attorney. And as a result, the officers, I believe the Supreme Court decided that when you have cohabitants on equal footing, that a declination such as that the husband offered is sufficient to bar entry.
Yes, but the rationale and the reasoning behind that is because when two people are, it looks at the actions of the people, one refusing consent to allow someone in and the other person allowing.
But here you have, what you're telling us is a unified position by both mother and son that there was no acquiescence to the entry
Correct.
Of the police officers.
Correct.
So that's factually distinction, a factual distinction from Georgia versus Randolph.
Correct, Your Honor. Although there is a factual distinction as to what the United States Supreme Court's decision came out as, the reasoning that the United States Supreme Court applies to Mr. Holmes's case, because in Mr. Holmes's case, the officer was claiming that based on the fact that Mr. Holmes closed the door, and the officer stopped Mr. Holmes from closing the door by jamming his foot into the door, which acted like a door stopper, and prevented Mr. Holmes from asserting his Fourth Amendment rights at that time. The officer testified that Mr. Holmes stepped back from the door a little bit after the officer jammed his foot into the door, and based on a facial expression of Mr. Holmes, the officer believed that he had implied consent to enter. However, as in Randolph, no sensible person under those conditions would believe that he or she had consent to enter when initially the person who answers the door begins to close the door on that visitor.
Well, the distinction in Randolph is that it was voiced. You don't have permission to come in here. And did Mr. Holmes say anything to the police officer about not being allowed to come in?
No, but Mr. Holmes did close the door on the officer. And Officer Englehart never specifically asked, "May I enter?" Although Officer Englehart asked to speak to the homeowner, requesting to speak to a homeowner cannot be interpreted as a request to enter the privacy of someone's home. If Officer Englehart wanted to enter, what he should have done was ask Mr. Holmes, "May I enter the house?" Or he should have gone back and gotten a warrant, as the Fourth Amendment would have required the officer to do so. And the officer claiming that Officer Holmes had implied had the ability to consent to the officer's entry shows that Officer Englehart reasonably believed that Mr. Holmes had apparent authority over the premises. Furthermore, Mr. Holmes had the right, as citizens have the right, to refuse an unlawful and warrantless police entry into their homes. The Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution guarantees that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. Article 1, Section 14 of the Ohio Constitution identically tracks the language of the Fourth Amendment to the United States Constitution. If the Court of Appeals decision affirming Mr. Holmes's conviction is allowed to stand, Mr. Holmes will have been convicted for asserting his Fourth Amendment right. Mr. Holmes was originally charged with 2 counts of assault and obstructing official business. The obstructing official business charge was indicted as a felony of the fifth degree, which requires a specific finding that the defendant create a risk of physical harm to any person. Based on a self-defense instruction, the jury found Mr. Holmes not guilty of the assault charges. One of those assault charges was the basis for the obstructing official business charge. As for the obstructing official business charge, because the jury did not find that Mr. Holmes created a risk of physical harm to any person, Mr. Holmes was convicted of a misdemeanor of the second degree. And the only way that this conviction can stand is if the Fourth Amendment has no meaning. And that is why we are before this court today, because Mr. Holmes had the right to refuse to consent to the unlawful and warrantless entry. As provided by the Fourth
Go ahead.
As provided by the Fourth Amendment and its Ohio counterpart, Mr. Holmes has the right to be secure, had the right to be secure at the Holmes residence against unreasonable searches and seizures.
Ms. Sudi, what principle, I've read your propositions of law, the first one speaks to this issue, what law are you looking for? This case appears to me to be maybe error correction, which we usually don't engage in. What's the principle of law here that you want us to state?
That under the Fourth Amendment, a person has the right to refuse to consent to an unlawful and warrantless police entry.
But there's nothing new about that, is there?
Well,
isn't this a case where the Court of Appeals applied the law and arguably incorrectly to the facts in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. However, the Sixth Circuit and other courts of review have noted that this court has not yet decided as to whether or not a person can refuse to consent to an unlawful police entry. And in this case, refuse to consent to an unlawful police entry and bar the officers from entering the house. And while courts of appeals have spoken on the issue, the Sixth Circuit had noted that this court had not yet rendered a decision, although a decision was rendered in cases like State versus Pembar, which this court noted that when in a business premises, a person did not have the right to refuse to consent to an unlawful and warrantless police entry. However, Mr. Holmes' case differs from State versus Pembar in that Mr. Holmes was in the sanctity and privacy of his mother's house and had standing to assert that Fourth Amendment right, and therefore had the right to refuse to consent to the unlawful and warrantless police entry. And Mr. Holmes cannot be convicted for asserting his constitutional rights. Furthermore, nothing in this case demonstrates that Mr. Holmes consented. Mr. Holmes' lack of consent is demonstrated by the jury's findings. Based on a self-defense instruction, the jury found that Mr. Holmes was not guilty of assaulting the officers. The obstructing official business charge was based on the assault charge. And Mr. Holmes could not have been consenting to the officer's entry at one point and defending himself against the officer's entry at that same point. Therefore, this jury finding demonstrates that Mr. Holmes was defending himself and that he did not impliedly consent to anything. Furthermore, the record demonstrates that Mr. Holmes did not consent to the officer's warrantless and unlawful entry. When Mr. Holmes initially was answering the officer's questions, Mr. Holmes began to close the door. The officer jammed his foot in that door. And as Officer Englehart demonstrated during trial, he knew that he did not have consent to enter when he stated that waiting to be invited in after somebody opens the door is a waste of his time. Officer Englehart forcefully entered the Holmes residence and stating that an officer's forceful entry into the private home demonstrates implied consent is contrary to the Fourth Amendment and common logic. It cannot be a crime for a citizen to refuse entry into his or her home to a law enforcement officer who does not have an appropriate warrant. If a citizen cannot bar an officer's warrantless and unlawful entry into his or her home, the Fourth Amendment has no meaning. Therefore, Mr. Holmes asks this court to reverse the Court of Appeals decision and to preserve the constitutional and statutory right to refuse to consent to unlawful and warrantless police entries. And unless this court has any further questions, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Udy.
Thank you.
Mr. Cassay.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, Richard Cassay representing the state of Ohio in this case.
Let me just read back to you what the counsel just quoted from, it was in a brief. Waiting to be invited in is a waste of time. That sounds like a direct conflict with the Fourth Amendment and with the test that the U.S. Supreme Court has established, does it not? A waste of time to be invited in?
Well, Your Honor,
maybe not an invitation, but even subjective facts saying you can come into my home and do what you want without your warrant.
I am not here arguing that the police can barge into anybody's home uninvited. That is not what the officer meant by the partial testimony that counsel just quoted. I think you have to, this is a confusing case because things are happening here in split second increments, and I'll get back to that. But Mr. Chief Justice, what you are picking up on and what's quoted in the public defender's brief is a statement by Officer Englehart, and I can't remember it verbatim, but he said essentially, in my line of work, if I wait for people to invite me in verbally, I'm wasting my time. Now, in context with what the evidence here was, that is not an unreasonable statement. Because what happened here, and I've cited page 149 and 177 in the transcript, and again, we have things happening in split-second increments, but what happened here is that after the officer Engelhardt came to the door, Mr. Holmes opened it. I concede it's a fact. The officer put his foot in the door. Now, if at that point the officer, as the police have done in other cases, unfortunately, had shoved their way into the house, then we have a different situation. We have something unlawful, we have something illegal. But that's not what happened. After the foot was in the door, the officer is continuing to talk to Mr. Holmes, trying to get him to understand that the officer needs to speak to the homeowner, who is not Mr. Holmes, by the way. He needs to speak to the homeowner about this loud noise that is emanating from this residence. Now, I can't tell you how long this conversation ensued, but there was some conversation because Officer Engelhardt testified. I continued to talk to him to try to get him to understand. Then Officer Engelhardt says, like a light bulb going off, I suppose, in Mr. Holmes' head, he says, he's talking about Mr. Holmes, he appeared to want to be cooperative. He stepped back, he opened the door. And the officer said, I had the impression it was okay to come in. So again, this case has to be separated into its parts. We have more than the foot in the door. We have this later action by Mr. Holmes, which the officer, I think, reasonably construed as consent to come into the house. When he starts to come into the house, he doesn't get all the way in. He gets the right side of his body, the right leg, and Mr. Holmes takes that door and slams it against him, crushing his leg between the door and the rest of the house. Now, this, I suppose, is a reasonable resistance to unlawful entry.
So that's debatable. Would you agree with your opposing counsel that this is more than a matter of error correction and that it is a case where a new principle of law ought to be articulated?
Your Honor, the principle that I think is the bedrock here, putting aside any waiver issue, is that consent can be implied as well as expressed. I don't know that that's such a new concept that, you know, I'm not going to tell this court what to do, but I don't know that it's that an important a thing that this court has to announce. It's well known. I've cited several cases, Asworth, Chiapo, Henderson, Sutton.
Well, counsel, what you just said, that consent can be implied as well as expressed.
Yes.
That's a case-by-case determination.
Yes.
Based on the activities that have happened within that case, which is, you know, goes without saying. I don't know that would be a proper holding for this court to...
I've suggested that jurisdiction was improvidently granted here. Perhaps that's a reason it may have been.
We apparently have, this court apparently has not written law on this, have we? There's no syllabus law on this. The Courts of Appeals.
The Courts of Appeals, the only case that I'm aware of is the one that is distinguishable, Pembauer, which was the commercial establishment. But it is a case-by-case factual determination, and I don't know that that's... fits into a broad syllabus law proposition.
Well, is there some value to the bench and the bar and everyone else who finds themselves in this situation for the Supreme Court to say essentially what the U.S. Supreme Court has said? So there's no question what the law of Ohio is.
There's always value in what this court says, Your Honor.
Good answer. That's a good answer. Good answer.
I wanted to. I wanted to refer to the Carter case, which is a case that the public defender cited in their brief. and I think this, I was going to lead off with this, but I didn't. But I think this really encapsulates this situation. And Judge Boggs for the Sixth Circuit said, although a man's home is his castle, trumpets need not herald an invitation. Now, in a nutshell, I think that is this case. I think, again, another thing that has to be kept in mind, we're dealing with a sufficiency of the evidence review. We are looking, obviously, at the evidence in the light most favorable to the prosecution. So we're not, we have to discount Mr. Holmes' account that basically the police just came in like stormtroopers. That's not acceptable under the standard of review. Under the proper standard of review, under the testimony of Officer Engelhardt, there was implied consent for him to at least start to come into the house. At that point, Mr. Holmes slammed the door. There was also an argument made about the assault. I wasn't quite sure what the argument was. Certainly counts are independent, but there was Officer Engelhardt also testified that when he got in the house, Mr. Holmes punched him in the face. So when the public defender says, well, the slamming is the assault, I think I have to disagree with that to an extent because the officer did say he was punched in the face. The jury acquitted Mr. Holmes of the assault. And what happened inside the house was essentially a melee. I don't think it's relevant to this appeal. But after that, it was chaos, and fists were flying, and bodies were being thrown around. You know, so certainly the jury could not have been certain beyond a reasonable doubt of what happened after the slamming incident at the door. Georgia versus Randolph, I think, is clear, has absolutely nothing to do with this case. You had one person saying yes, one person saying no. It's simply not what you have here. I don't think anything that the Court of Appeals did here is threatening to the Fourth Amendment. I don't think the Fourth Amendment is going to crumble if this case is affirmed or if this case is dismissed. There is I think, a little bit of confusion. If you read the Court of Appeals opinion, particularly the first couple paragraphs, and you read the dissent, Judge Batchelder's dissent, you know, I can't explain it, but that is really not what occurred. If you read this opinion, I think you can get the impression that the police just forced their way in the house. What is not made clear, but what is clear in the transcript, is what I have told you, Officer Engelhardt saying, Mr. Holmes, open the door and step back. That's the implied consent. That's the real crux of what I think we're dealing with here today.
Even though the door was closed on the officer's leg when the officer tried to come in, there's still consent.
The door was pulled back off of the officer's foot, Mr. Chief Justice. Again, I concede that if the foot was in the door and the foot and the door's against the foot and the police push in, this is a different case. But I think that the record is clear that that is not the case that you have here.
The defendant says, and we're talking about facts here, but the defendant says he held back on the door because he thought the door was going to hit him in the head.
The defendant never testified.
Well, whoever it was that testified. Didn't somebody testify to that? It's in the reply brief.
There was testimony, I think, by four or five defense witnesses. Interestingly, some of them were across the street, but they nevertheless could tell what's happening. The defense witnesses basically were saying that the police came to the door. Mr. Holmes said, "Okay, I'm going to turn down the music," and then right away the police reached in with their flashlight and started beating him on the head, and they pushed their way in. You know, that's the jury didn't buy that. And again, to reiterate the standard of review, it's not a version that I think plays a role in this case. But I will again concede, Mr. Chief Justice, if the police had pushed their way in without any implied invitation, this is a different case. But I just don't think this is the case that you have. If there are no further questions, I thank you for your attention, and I'll conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Cassay. Ms. Sudi, you've saved a little more than 2 minutes of your time. Let me ask you about the statement in your reply brief that I see it's not in quotes, that Englehart placed his foot in the door because Mr. Holmes began to shut the door. When the officer placed his foot in the entryway of Holmes' residence, Mr. Holmes had no choice but to move out of the way of the door. Mr. Holmes did not step back. He would have been hit in the head by the door. Is that just yours?
Correct. Yes, that's just okay. common logic. As Mr. Holmes was closing the door and the officer wedged his foot into that door, an automatic reaction of the door is going to be for the door to move back a little bit. And Officer Holmes stepping back was stepping away from the door to not get hit in the head. That was just a common logic next step. And what the state argued was that the facts of this case must be in the light most favorable to the prosecution. However, the jury found that Mr. Holmes was acting in self-defense and Mr. Holmes was found not guilty of both of the counts of assault based on a self-defense instruction. And while one of those assault charges was when the officers were already inside, the other assault charge was the basis of the obstructing official business charge. And the prosecutor stated that on page 440 of the transcript. And this was an in-chambers discussion regarding jury instruction, and the prosecutor stated, no, the assault charge was the closing of the door on the officer's knee.
Counsel, is there something in the record that says the jury decided this on a self-defense conclusion?
There was a self-defense jury instruction.
Okay, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the jury decided this on a self-defense.
No, yes, it does, because Mr. Holmes's whole defense throughout trial was self-defense. And the self-defense defense is, I did this act, but I was justified in doing this act. And I was justified in doing this act because I was defending myself. I felt that I was in imminent danger of bodily harm. And based on that self-defense instruction, Mr. Holmes was found not guilty. And a person who is defending himself cannot be impliedly consenting at the same time. I see my time is up, and unless this court has any further questions, I would like to just request that this court reverse the Court of Appeals opinion.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.